our next speaker, Patty Anderson from the Florida Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services. And she's going to tell us about something that makes a lot of us in the industry who work with the industry a little uncomfortable when it comes to regulation of some of the plants that are involved in the invasive plant list. Patty.
Good afternoon. It's a pleasure to be here with you, and I want to say thank you to Dia for explaining why my job is necessary. I work with the Division of Plant Industry. We're part of the Department of Agriculture and Consumer Services, and our job is to protect Florida's native and commercially produced plants and the apiary industry. Some of the things we're responsible for are regulating permits to harvest our endangered and threatened species, and monitoring the noxious weeds that are listed. And as Dia explained, Florida has a lot of pests because it's such a great place. Everything wants to live here. In addition to the geography that you talked about, our climate is such that a broad range of plants can live here, from the temperate north to the subtropical south. We also have a lot of tourism. For those of you who've had a chance to look beyond the hotel, this is a place people like to come, and sometimes they bring with them some of their favorite plants to share with family members who are here, or maybe people are traveling and find a plant one place, they bring it along to take home with them, and maybe they lose a little bit of that. And the other thing is we have a lot of air traffic, ship traffic, accidental movement of plants can occur. Things like hurricanes can come from Africa, birds can come from the Caribbean, and those planes can come from just about anywhere. We've had an outbreak of a noxious weed, a grass that's been confined to the Homestead Air Force Base, and it's very tempting to assume that it came on an airplane from Asia, although we have no way of knowing where it came from. But then we bring in the pests ourselves. It's like the vampire knocking on the door. We ask it to come right in. We say, we love those beautiful plants. We want the new ones, the best ones. And the estimate I had was 85%. It could be 60%. Whatever it is, it's a number that we have to be cautious about. And it's very difficult to know what is new and beautiful and well adapted to grow in Florida and what can be a problem. We bring in all this plant material, and the only things that can be rejected are things that are listed as noxious weeds by the federal government or by the state they're going into. And of course, as we've talked about, most of our ornamental plants are not problems. We don't want to regulate the beautiful plants that live here and succeed and stay where they're put. But there are the other plants. Kudzu, beautiful flowers, deep purple, fragrant, the kind of plant you'd love to just walk out and breathe in until it covers your house. So in 1899, it's part of a lot of plant exploration that was going on then, kudzu was brought here, and we now know it's a big problem. Sometimes it takes a long time to find out that a plant's going to be a problem. We can see if it's invasive in other places now, but when in the 1800s, the early 1900s, some of our dear friends, Melaleuca, Australian pine, came. From 1900 to 1976 is a long time for plants to get established. And so Julia Morton wrote this article in 76 saying these species are now receiving serious attention. So it took quite a while for the non-native invasive species to be recognized, and then what to do. I mean, Brazilian pepper came in 1840s. In 2012, the estimate was that it covered 700,000 acres. If you happen to drive on any of our interstates in South Florida, you'll be surprised that any acre is not covered by this plant. It's just amazing. And considering especially that for all this time we've been trying to control it, and still you can buy it. This was on the internet last fall. The internet's an incredible opportunity in many ways, but it also has some challenges we face because it's almost impossible to regulate. People can sell plants on eBay, on their own websites. There's no physical address necessarily. Pay by PayPal. You don't need to know where it's going. We don't know where it's coming from. And most of the places are not registered nurseries that we might have some control over. Part of the work of the Division of Plant Industry is regulating the nurseries and making sure that they follow the rules. So even though this is a wreath, the berries might not have been killed. They could have viable seeds. So those are some of the challenges we face. And we have some regulatory tools. There's some lists that we've talked about, some that we haven't. I'm not sure we mentioned the Florida Exotic Pest Plant Council. It's a voluntary association. They can make agreements with the nursery association to limit sales of plants. They focus on plants that have disrupted natural areas. So agricultural weeds are not really a concern of theirs. They have no regulatory authority. Gia did a great job of showing us the IFAS assessment and its role in providing information, providing recommendations. Again, they can't stop a nursery from selling anything. There are two other lists, and if you'd like to see them, I have brought copies. Should anybody care to see the Florida Noxious Weed and Invasive Species list and the Florida Prohibited Aquatics list. There's sort of a historical accident that gives us two different lists. The aquatic plants were regulated by the Division of Environmental Protection, and fairly recently that job was given to the Division of Plant Industry and Agriculture. The rules were written at different times. There are different restrictions. There are different constraints on who can have a permit to handle those plants. So ideally, we would have a single list with a single set of rules, and eventually that might happen. So the things that are regulated by Florida are anything that's listed by the federal government as a noxious weed, or anything that's on the state list. There are some things that are on the state list that are not federally regulated, like the Lucina leucocephala, white lead tree. It's a problem only in Florida, well, maybe Hawaii as well, but it's not a general problem, and USDA has not, the United States Department of Agriculture, has not listed it as a federal noxious weed, but it is a problem in Florida. Some of the plants they've listed were not problems in Florida until they arrived. So the Mycania micrantha is another example of a plant that was on the federal list because of problems in, say, Puerto Rico or other more tropical areas. It arrived in Florida and has been contained within a fairly small geographical area in Homestead. We're monitoring it, and there are voluntary groups that are looking for it and trying to make sure that it doesn't spread. If a plant is a federal noxious weed, it has to be alive. Once it's dead, it's not against the law to have it. It's not native and not widely prevalent in the United States. So you might think, logically, that if something gets really, really bad and covers the entire country, then it would be taken off the list because it would be prevalent. But that was their language. So their focus is on economic problems, especially for agriculture. They do include problems for wildlife resources and public health. But in general, the weeds they've listed have been agricultural concerns. Florida started its noxious weed list in 1993. We found that noxious weeds are blocked at the borders by the United States by the federal noxious weed list, but they could move from one state to another without federal control, especially when something's listed by the state of Florida and not the federal government. So, or things that are problems here that are not national problems. So we needed to create our own list. And in 2004, we decided that the agricultural concern and the economic concern was not enough, that if our mission is to protect native plants and commercially produced plants, we have to look at invasive species too, things that will grow in natural areas and disrupt them. So our concerns are for agricultural threats, and historically most of the species put on the list have been agricultural weeds. If something has negative consequences for our endangered, threatened, or commercially exploited plants, they need to go on the noxious weed list as well, because we're trying to protect our endangered species. We need to do that by protecting them from pest plants as well. And then if a plant disrupts native plant communities, and we're a little behind on recognizing all the plant species that could disrupt native plant communities, but the way to expand the list for any plant that's a problem is to add them to the noxious weed list by filling out our form. As a good bureaucracy, we have a form for everything. So the FDEX 08215, which I have copies here if you'd like to see. Read both sides. Fill one out for your least favorite plant. That form provides information about why listing it would keep it from being a problem. You know, no need to put it on the list if it's not going to do any good. We want to know, is this going to cause a problem for Florida's plant industries, especially small businesses? What are the consequences of listing this plant? And then there's scientific information, much like you've heard before from the IFAS assessment. What are the biological properties of this plant that would cause it to affect agricultural areas or natural areas? Does it have those characteristics of invasive species that we looked at just before? So as an example, finally I get to answer your question. Ardisia crenata, or coral ardisia. It's a plant that's more of a problem in North Florida and Central Florida. In June of 2012, a process was initiated with filling out one of these nice forms. And to make sure all the information was available, a professor inquired of USDA if they had a weed risk assessment. USDA does its own assessments to analyze plants all across the country that could become problems. And it turned out they were at least doing preliminary work on that. And so they published that in October of 2013, but because the information was available, we got to see a preliminary version of it. You can see how this Ardisia crenata covers the understory in a forest, a natural area. And you can see the red berries, much like Brazilian pepper and nandina, bright red, attractive to birds, and just the right size to fit in a bird's mouth and be carried to the next natural area. So USDA does a risk assessment in which they use models of information to predict whether a species will become an invader. And they look at things like how easily can it be spread? What's its biological potential in terms of reproductive capacity? How far could it spread? What would it do if it spreads? Will it cover an understory and prevent the growth of other species? So using the information they collected, they said there's a high risk that coral ardesia will be an invasive species of concern to USDA. So we took that bit of knowledge. We looked at the IFAS assessment, which we've had a better explanation than I could give you, and I don't know if I looked at the wrong spot on the website, but what I saw was that it was invasive and not recommended, but certainly not recommended. It's for North and Central Florida. So, with all that information gathered, finally, about a year later, there was a meeting of the Noxious Weed Review Committee. And that's a committee composed of three people at the Division of Plant Industry. I'm one of the members. The chief of our Bureau of Plant Inspection, which deals with the nursery industry, is another member. And our assistant director is a member. In addition, we have a weed scientist and a natural resource scientist from University of Florida. And together, we and anyone else who cares to attend the meeting discuss those factors that are on the application form. How will listing this species control its spread? What effect will it have on the industry? And so in March, we said, this plant is bad enough to be listed. Well, then the law has to change. There are rules that govern noxious weeds. There's a queue, a line of a number of rules that we're responsible for at the Division of Plant Industry. So it takes a while, even after a decision is made, to rewrite the statute. Even if it's only inserting some species names, there were four. Ardesia crenata was one. There were three others at the same time. And when that information is passed on to the legal counsel and legislative staff in Tallahassee, they ask, what is your opinion of the adverse effect on small businesses? Is there any? And in our judgment, our experience, we said it would be a minimal impact on business. One thing that some people forget is that if a weed is so bad that it's going to be listed as a noxious weed species or invasive species, it's growing wildly on its own. It's hard to make money on plants that you can just take a few seeds from a stroll through the woods and fill up your yard. So by the time we get to regulate a plant, often it's not a major impact on the nursery industry. There's some exceptions to that, and some people find ways to make money from them. But in this case, we found the impact would be small. And then we're asked to answer the question, is this likely to be costly to regulate? And in this case, we felt it's not going to be a big problem to list this species and include it in the work that's already being done to regulate other noxious weed species. Then, once those questions are answered and published, then anyone who wants to ask questions about it, propose a different solution, has the right to have a hearing, and then if that happened, there would be additional time needed for scheduling, but no one did in this case. And so the rule change was published and became effective on July 21st, 2014. So now, don't sell any Artesia crenata. That's one of the consequences of being listed. The other thing is, it now becomes unlawful to introduce it or move it or release it unless you have a permit from the Division of Plant Industry. So technically, if you wanted to clean up a bunch of it and carry it to a landfill, you'd need to fill out a form with us first so we make sure that you're not going to pull it up and spread it around. Most permits are applied for by researchers who are wanting to do some kind of work on the weed problem. Maybe biological controls with insects, maybe pesticide studies. And our main concern is that anyone using the plant for a good purpose doesn't accidentally spread it. If noxious weeds are being brought into the country, USDA has similar requirements so that the packaging is secure and the materials destroyed after the research is done. The major impact of having a species listed is that it can no longer be sold. And if it's found in nursery stock as weeds in pots or weeds in in-ground plantings, then the nursery cannot sell the plant that's infested. So it's in their interest to control those weeds. They have a choice to remove the weeds and have one of our inspectors come back and certify that it's weed-free, or they can destroy the plant material. And it's their choice, which they want to do. If there are noxious weeds growing in the nursery environment, on the edge of the property, not in plants for sale, we would generally warn the nursery owner that seeds or other propagules could easily get into their plant material, and it would be in their interest to get rid of those weedy species, even though they're not intended for sale or in material that's going to be sold. So that's what we do to regulate plants that are listed. A concern I have is that it takes a long time to recognize a plant should be on the noxious weed list. And as you saw from the coral Artesia, even if it's recognized as a plant that's a problem, it can take several years to get it onto a list so it will then be regulated. We can't exclude any plants that are not on the list, and we don't even require any evaluation of the plants before they come into the state. So I think a challenge for all of us who are interested in having a beautiful state, enjoying plants from that are native and non-native, is to think about what can be done before the plants escape and become huge problems. The United States Department of Agriculture, as I mentioned, they require permits to bring in plants from outside the country, and they can do a pest risk analysis and not give that permit. But we have many accidental entries. We have plants that are here that could be problems that we hope the university and breeding community are looking at. Some things might be done, like trial gardens. I know some of you work with sterile cultivars or looking for cultivars that might not have the invasive characteristics of the species. So my question for you is what can be done? What else can be done? Or how can we encourage people to do more? And I would just look, you know, want you to know that we can list cultivars on the noxious weed and invasive species list as exceptions. So the cultivar would, if a species is listed and a cultivar proves to be sterile or non-invasive, the list can say except the named species, the named cultivar, sorry. So that's the end of my story. If any of you have things to add, please let me know. Yes.
I have a question. How much correlation is there between the ICOS list and the state noxious weed list? Like how many do you have in both lists?
I don't know the number for IFAS, but on the list I have here, I show the ones that are in common with the FLEPSI, Florida Exotic Pest Plant Council. You know, the IFAS assessment can say something is with caution or not recommended or clearly invasive. Also, the IFAS assessment focuses on non-native plants that are problematic in native in natural areas. Our original focus was on agricultural pests, and we've since expanded to include invasive species in natural areas. So there is some overlap, but they do have different focuses. Yeah.
So the slide you had like four different groups listed. What was the?
The four different, you're asking what were the four lists that I had on the slide?
Yeah.
Now,
do they all have a website?
Do they all link to each other? I think on our website, well, our website has many good features.
I find yours very hard to navigate.
On our website, you can find our noxious weed list. Florida Exotic Pest Plant Council has a website. They update their list about every 2 years. I think 2013 was the update year. On our website, we have prohibited aquatic plants that you can find if you search. And the IFAS assessment, you saw their website, and the coming update will make it all easier.
I'm thinking if somebody lands on the IFAS assessment site, they should be able to link to the other three just to be aware of the fact that those exist out there, and you have like one stop for the resource to get them all before they actually link to each other from, you know, all the sites somehow, because I'm working with an industry that came in here doing plant growing stuff, and if they knew that they could go
Yeah, thank you. I have had questions coming to me from time to time from growers or other people who say, there are too many lists. My county has a list of things that are prohibited. My homeowners association has a list of things that are prohibited. What do I need to do? What's the right thing? And it is a difficult issue. Since these are different organizations, they're not even all state agencies. It's hard to coordinate, but I appreciate your point, and I'll try to get my website to have all of them on there. Yeah.
I have one more question.
I think it's interesting going on to that point. I think the problem is you know the question to ask. The problem is, like in a botanical garden, we know how to find all those lists, and we have people that sit on all those committees. It's the industry that's importing a lot of plants. They have no idea how to find those lists. They have no idea what to look for. They don't know. Most of them don't. And I think that's the most interesting point that I think, as an industry and as a state, we have to be really careful about is getting that information out, because there's there are a lot more people with permits out there for importing plants than botanical gardens. I mean, the vast majority of the permits are to nurserymen, and they aren't looking at those lists. Or they maybe they choose not to, or they don't know they exist.
They don't know they have to.
Yeah, exactly. So I just think that's an interesting point. I don't know how they resolve it.
Well, there are nursery associations.
And maybe that.
FNGLA could perhaps promote the idea of being responsible. Okay. Well, thank you all very much, and if you'd like a list.